This is episode 322 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, March 7th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. In this ever-changing world of hardware and software, things come and go. What's hip and cool one day can be a footnote in the history of modern-day communications the next. One notable stayer, though, is malware, the nasty computer programs that try and steal our innermost secrets for the sole purpose of emptying out our bank accounts and turning your home computer into a zombie. Once upon a time, Trojans and viruses were designed to annoy us. They made characters fall off your screen, deleted things, and replicated themselves throughout your system. And looking back on it, it was mostly harmless. In the past decade or so, things have changed. Today's malware is hell-bent on stealing your identity and by stealth. Only a combination of common sense, anti-malware software, a secure mailbox, and following best practices will keep you one step ahead of these crooks. The problem is that with new operating systems and new hardware being foisted upon us at an almost daily occurrence, today's malware writers don't have to look very hard for new ways to exploit software and devices on our must-have gadgets. As reported last week, malware writers have replaced Google's recently released Android Market security tool with a bonus Trojan. The fake tool exploits Google's answer to the information-stealing Droid Dream malware, which had up to 200,000 users. Google's cleanup tool promised to wipe 50 offending applications from devices. The fake tool allowed its controller to send SMS messages at will, but its impact is currently limited to the Chinese Android market. So when it comes to embracing new technology, we're damned if we do and damned if we don't. If you err on the side of safety, then waiting a few months after new releases or upgrades become available is most likely your saviour. We can't just not embrace technology, so that's just not an option. But using common sense and keeping systems up to date with updates and patches should keep us safe in today's internet wilderness.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
This week, Adam Turner takes the couch on the road and catches up with Catherine Kerr from the Australian Computer Emergency Response Team to talk about the latest security trends. We'll take a look at Phone 7 with Microsoft's Phone 7 guru, Dave Glover. There'll be a first week winner of our App of the Week. We'll revisit Kindle after being inundated with email. And now that iOS 4.3 has hit the streets, we'll check out the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's all to come on today's edition of Tech Talk Radio. But first up, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, a Telstra contract change results in Australian job losses. Microsoft's Kinect is selling faster than Apple's iPhone and iPad. Australia's domestic spy agency combats cyber espionage. Angry Birds are by no means wanting for cash. And NASA is fully committed to searching for life on Mars. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A call centre operator has announced it will cut about 740 jobs from city and regional operations centres after losing a lucrative contract with Telstra. Cellnat says it will have to shed staff in Wagga Wagga, Geelong, Bundaberg and Sydney after failing to make the shortlist for a contract renegotiation. The head of Cellnat's corporate affairs, Mr. Josh Fawkes, spoke on ABC Radio last week. Mr. Fawkes said Cellnat was trying to do everything it could for impacted staff, particularly in regional centres.
We're just talking with the government to see not necessarily in what support, but how they can support us with other clients so we can try and keep these people employed if it's possible.
Telstra says that because the contracts are still subject to a tender process, they cannot reveal which companies have won the work. Cellnat said it would maintain a close relationship with Telstra, with Cellnat continuing to provide customer communication services and Telstra providing Cellnat with telephone services. Shares in Cellnet dropped by over 6% after the announcement last week. Microsoft has sold more than 50 million Xbox 360 consoles worldwide, and its motion-sensing Kinect hardware has been declared the fastest-selling consumer electronics device of all time by the Guinness Book of World Records. This not insignificant achievement means that Microsoft has beaten the Apple juggernaut ahead of sales figures for both the iPhone and the iPad. Kinect went on sale for $199 in November last year, and 10 million Kinect sensors have since been sold worldwide. According to the gaming editor for Guinness World Records, Mr. Gaz Deves, no other consumer electronics device sold faster within a 60-day time span. Mr. Deves described the sales figures as an incredible achievement. The new record will be included in the next Guinness World Records Gamers Edition, which recognizes record-breaking achievements in the world of video games. The Australian Security Intelligence Organisation, ASIO, has created a unit to combat cyber espionage. While the unit was reportedly formed some 9 months ago, its inception was expected to be announced by the Attorney General, Mr. Robert McClelland, in Canberra last week. The intelligence unit has been formed to monitor espionage attempts against Australian national security interests. It will release alerts to agencies and critical infrastructure owners operating in a similar role to the federal government's existing Computer Emergency Response Team, or CERT. The extraordinarily popular mobile video game Angry Birds has secured a funding injection of $42 million. The Finnish developer Rovio Mobile last week announced the funding round led by Accel Partners and Atomico Ventures. Rovio says the funding will be used to continue expanding its Angry Birds franchise while also developing new titles. Rovio released more than 50 mobile games before Angry Birds was unleashed on Apple's App Store in 2009. Angry Birds has since recorded over 75 million downloads to smartphones, including ad-supported and premium versions of the game. And, despite funding shortfalls for NASA, the US National Research Council released a report last week detailing its firm intention to search for signs of life on Mars. The current economic climate is forcing scientists to prioritize space programs and ensure value for money. The chair of the Space Industry Association of Australia, Mr. Brett Biddington, on ABC Radio last week said there are no surprises in the report's prioritized projects.
The first is really to see if there's life on Mars. The second to see if there's life on one of the four of the main planets of Jupiter, and the third is a less defined mission to Uranus.
Mr. Biddington went on to say that Americans have recognised they cannot afford to go it alone in space anymore, and that the European Space Agency would almost certainly be an integral partner in any future missions to Mars. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, really? There goes the show. Off you go.
Yes, we're all individuals.
Shut up, Dr. Ron. It's not a...
You're answering a question with a question.
You're asking me a question that I don't want to answer.
That's out the there, scariest part.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
JD, how are you?
Pleasure to be here.
You know the iPhone 4's come out since you were here last?
Well, the cloud, very simply, is the ability to access IT services from third parties over a network.
Apple are going to end up with a Weekend at Bernie's problem, aren't they, in the end?
They're... Oh, that's terrible.
I've got 4.2 now. I upgraded.
Did it slow it down at all?
Oh, did it what?
Have you heard people complain that their iPad isn't thin enough? Or that their iPad isn't fast enough?
That's flagful for you.
I very much enjoy it. I think it's a very funny television show.
It used to be cool.
I gave up Warcraft for you, Lena. What else do you want me to do? You're going to bring me to my knees,
guys. Yeah, I want you to get rid of
IE6. Give up IE6.
That's the next thing you're telling me.
That's why I was linking this.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for this a lovely summery March edition from Melbourne. And joining us on the panel this evening, walking away from the panel, is Dr. Graham, CEO. It's been lovely. He's popping. He's just disappeared off from it. But in the middle is Dr. Ron. Good evening, Dr. Ron.
Good evening. Andrew, I'll sit tight for the time being.
You can talk to somebody. Off as soon as you try and introduce
that those. Was quite funny, actually. I think it was like Graham had had enough. He just stood up and walked out.
We haven't even started yet. It must have been that thing in the promo about the Weekend of Bernie's reference, which everyone blushed about. Here he is.
Graham, explain yourself.
Well, I thought you were going to introduce Dr. Ron first, so I thought I had time to quickly get up and make a quick adjustment to a level I wanted to adjust.
All right, well, yes. Anyway, welcome. After all that, it was very funny.
Thank you.
And joining us down on the very end of the panel is a long, 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 long lost panelist. He's also finally found his way back to the studio.
That'll go in next week's promo.
Mark Diggins, welcome very much. Welcome back to the studio. And it's lovely to see you again and all that sort of stuff. And, yeah, you can talk all sorts of new gadgety things, hopefully. Thanks, what you've been doing in the United States.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Nice to be back. And, yeah, just think you just moved into the studio when I left. I see it's getting a paint job already, so that's how long I've been going.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. Anyway, yeah, Lydia left. She hasn't come back. She's still over there. She's in Palo Alto. She bought a house anyway. So anyway,
making it permanent.
Making it very permanent. So, but no, it's good over there, isn't it? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we could have stayed.
You
there.
Traveled.
I did travel a lot with work, particularly in the last job. I did 21 months and I was traveling up and down the East Coast and Canada. It was a great time seeing lots of different things. I mean, we'd got to the 3-year point and decided that, you know, it was either stay here now, like maybe Lyd's doing, or come back home. And mm-hmm. we chose to come home, but not because we were having a bad time or anything. It was great over there.
Well, but then again, you're back in Melbourne, and Melbourne's the best city in the world.
It is. It is a great city.
You never have to dig your car out of the snow.
Oh, particularly this season, too. It was really bad over there for snow.
Yes, I saw some of your photos.
The photos on Facebook and things like that, yeah. Oh, goodness.
You would have gone from minus 24 degrees to plus 24 degrees coming back.
Wasn't
here.
That the case when you came back? Wasn't it 40 degrees here when you came out of something?
A few days, I think it was like I'd finished work. It was in the week before I was coming back. 9 a.m. in the morning, it was minus 21 degrees Celsius. And I got back the day I got back, it was 40 degrees Celsius.
So that's 61 degrees difference in temperature.
Change in about 3 days or something, yeah.
How did your body cope with that? Did it just go, no, you've got to be kidding, and pass out or something? Or
we just stay inside with the air conditioning and so, you know, got used to this.
With the aircon set to minus 24.
Yeah, that's right.
You would have had a nice 36-hour buffer zone in the plane, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know about nice there, Graham. You know, it's like flying.
Yes, you're hermetically sealed into a recycled air-conditioned space for however many hours.
Having said that, I did fly via Australia, which is the first time we'd done it, and we got upgraded to premium economy, and it was excellent. Really enjoyed it, new plane, and they give you noise-cancelling headphones, which was...
Is that because they're noisy?
Well, I don't think these newer planes are that noisy, but it was still nice to have the noise-cancelling headphones to use.
What type of aircraft was it that you came back on?
I can't remember which one it was, but the one with two engines, which I was getting worried about, because normally when you fly across that much water, you got four engines, you know.
Yeah, it's handy. Although four engines hasn't saved you. I came back on an A380, which, as we know, what happens to A380s with Rolls-Royce engines on them.
Yeah. Well, at least you got three others if one goes.
Wow, well, absolutely. Anyway, it's been a very interesting week in the Tech Talk Radio land, I guess. Dr. Ron, you certainly stirred up a hornet's nest last week with the Kindle references that you were making, doing some Kindle spotting on the train of recent times.
We got so much feedback about the Kindle, didn't we? It was fantastic.
We did indeed. We've also been running our App of the Week competition, and there's been some wonderful entries come in the door, which we've all been going, oh, that's interesting, isn't that great? So, yeah, keep them coming. Even via Twitter, I've had some come through.
Yes.
Which has been really good.
So, a lot of people approving of the Kindle. They say it's a great product, and they enjoy using it.
Well, shall we hit the Coro now? And you can read a few of those lovely emails we got in at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, or come and join us on the chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, while we're on air.
Absolutely. This is like getting the band back together, isn't it? With Mark in the studio here and
absolutely.
Graham, all of us.
The squeaky one's gone.
Yeah, the squeaky one.
Now.
It's like she said it was a...
You'll get mail about that.
That'll get back.
It was a chair, she said, last week.
Oh, that's right. A chair was squeaking. Yes. Lena sends her apologies. She's in Bris Vegas this week. So
I know.
Join us.
Have you been watching her on the Twitterverse?
And JD sends his apologies this week as well. I have. Yes, she's been going crazy, but she's enjoying herself, though, I think.
Well, that's good. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Lots of bacon.
GJMCN, via the contact form, says, after listening to your last pod, two things come to mind. One, mind-controlled cars.
Mind control?
Did we talk about that last week?
Yeah. We spoke about Google computer-controlled cars, but GJ says, mind-controlled cars. SBS ran a series called Prototype This, and in Series 1, they had this. I watched it, and unless it was a con, it really worked. I suppose might have been just a really good con, GJ. Who knows? The concepts and applications developed in this episode correlate well with wiring your car to your brain. And he's put some show notes there. The original air date was 15th of October 2008. Episode name, Mind Controlled Car. Our team of inventors attempts to prototype a car that utilises biofeedback sensors to restrict a car's performance as its driver's agitation level increases.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's probably better than what I was thinking.
What were you thinking?
Well, I was thinking the car would just do whatever you thought. So, you know, you think about turning left, the car turns left. You think about turning right, the car turns right. You think about running over that silly woman on the side of the road and you run her over.
What happens if I'm thinking about the Tech Talk radio podcast?
Yeah, it'll play it. It'll just, yeah, connect to the stream and play it through the sound system. Yeah.
What if Lena thinks she wants to eat bacon?
Well, it'll take some bacon and...
It'll take you through a drive, the nearest drive-through.
Maybe.
For a bacon burger. The second thing...
Notice how I've been very quiet.
Says GJ, is a good read suggestion for your gamers, as the author is a bigwig with the Call of Duty series, and he has a great website for all the science of the tech that he has in the books. Demon and Freedom TM, Techno Thriller Series, by author Daniel Suarez and Walter F. Parks, who produced the 1983 film War Games. He's optioned the film rights to Demon with Paramount Pictures. So there's a suggestion there from GJ. Thanks again. Keep up the good work. Thank you for the feedback.
And you might put that reference in the show notes when you do them on the forum, perhaps.
I shall. And where's the forum, Graham?
forum.techtalkradio.com.au, where Dr. Ron writes notes on every single episode that we do with all the references and links and websites and things we talk about.
And apps of the week now.
And apps and gadgets and odd spots, yes.
Cisco in Oklahoma. Cisco's in our chat room.
He's on the chat tonight.
Yeah.
Hi, Cisco.
Cisco from Okla. He's in the chat room. Says via our feedback form, greetings all. Glad to hear you back on air. I love the new app of the week segment and Lena's new intro clip. She really adds another level
fan mail
of fun to the show. It's Lena fan mail. I wanted to build on something Dr. Ron said a few weeks ago when he was talking about how to deal with online piracy by making the contents available for a fair price. I think Graham might have been talking about that as well. I encourage all of you to poke around into the world of anime, which is Japanese cartoons. I point this out for two reasons. The first is that some of you might actually like them. And he says, the second reason I mention this is because the process of getting anime from Japan has some interesting parallels with the online piracy argument. And he talks about what he used to do back in the 80s and buying VHS tapes and importing things. My point, though, at the end is that the anime experience in the US proves Dr. Ron's argument that people will stop pirating stuff in a large part if it's available for a reasonable price.
Yeah.
Not a perfect solution here at the moment, to be sure, but it does beat encryption so thick that you might not be able to watch the disc you just purchased on your own computer. Regards, Cisco in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. And again, yeah, DVDs and Blu-rays with where you can't legally have a player on open source operating systems and stuff like that. So frustrating. So yes, he's quite right. And I think we've all made this comment in the past.
Have you ever been into anime?
I never have. I've never quite got the gist of it, I'm afraid. It's never got into my brain.
Andrew?
No.
Shaking his head. Mark?
No.
Shaking
no.
his head.
It's. I think it's an acquired taste, but that's my personal opinion.
I think it is.
Mm.
Just on that, if it's how cheap it is and alike. Many years ago when I was working for MobileNet, a manager at the time said he wanted the cost of mobile phone calls to be, he called it bubblegum. He wanted the cost to be the same as a piece of bubblegum so that people would stop thinking about the cost when they're making a mobile phone call.
Yep,
and they just use it, just like their normal phone. And I think we're almost at that spot now. People pick their plans, but it's like you get $50 and you get $250 worth of calls, which is bizarre to me coming from the US where you pay for your minutes and they tell you how many minutes, not how many dollars worth of artificial calls you're going to get. But if it's cheap enough, people just use them, forget about the cost, and that's what they were trying to aim for in those days.
I think that's right here. You get into a particular usage pattern, and it's just how you run your life. It's how you use your mobile phone. And you don't consciously think, oh, this phone call's, well, it's coming up to 5 minutes now, I better not go over that or something. You're just accustomed to using it in a particular way, and you find a cap that suits your usage pattern, and you stick with it.
Yeah, I have a little app that sits on my phone, which keeps me up to tabs with how much data I've used and how many calls I've made. And as long as I don't get too silly and carried away with it. But yeah, you're right.
I think most people don't even bother with an app that tracks how many calls they've made. I think most people just, yeah. I can remember back when we first got our mobile phones and if using the mobile phone, making a mobile call was a big deal. And people would never ring you on your mobile because, oh, it's too expensive to ring your mobile. And exactly. Now no one thinks about it. You know, people will ring on their mobile because it's too far to get up and get the cordless phone out of its cradle.
Yeah, but it's also the way we're going these days, where I don't want to talk to someone between you and me, Graham. Like, I don't want to talk to whoever might be living in your house at the time or anything like that.
That's right, yeah.
We're all so time precious these days. I want to speak directly to you, and if you're not there, well, bad luck. I'll leave a message, or I'll leave a text, or I'll get Telstra to try and interpret something for me and text it to you as well,
That's a good point, that person-to-person thing, isn't it? Yeah, because if you ring the home number, you don't know who's going to pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you remember those analog phones and the early digital phones where they actually had call timers on them and you could turn them on and off and
I've
people
on
watch their call timers to see how much they were going to spend and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So,
not anymore. You just don't think about it anymore.
No.
Moving on.
Carl, via the feedback form, says, "Hi again, panel. I may have sent you the wrong Australian release date for the iPad 2.
Oops.
If I said the 27th of March, what I actually meant was the 25th of March. Yes, 25th of March for the release of the iPad 2. Having said that, I just bought a version 1 iPad for $150 off. I was planning to wait for the iPad 2, but the more I thought about it, says Carl.
Listen to us last week.
Absolutely. The more I realised the original iPad was more than sufficient for what we needed, and a reduced $150 was irresistible. A low-res camera and faster processor just wasn't enough to make me wait for the new one. Looking forward to Monday's show, Carl."
Would that be a new one that Carl got there for $150 off, or he'd be buying second-hand?
Version 1.
No, but is it a brand new version 1, or is he buying a second-hand off eBay?
Big W last week were advertising $200 off every model.
To clear stock.
To clear their stock. Okay. So if it was $699, you could have picked up for $499.
Right.
Whatever that flavour was. But just a flat $200 off everything. So, and that's how they're clearing their stock.
Very good.
It seems to be the consensus from the reviewers that the iPad 1 to iPad 2 is a sort of a minor, it's almost a bug fix release. It's almost fixing up a couple of things that they didn't quite get right on the first one. It's not a major new product.
Yeah, well, yes.
They've made it a bit thinner. They've put another camera in it.
We should talk about
really
that
cares?
Later in the show. But yes.
David, via email, says, "Tech Talk Radio. On your last show, your featured gadget was the Amazon Kindle.
Here we go.
I've got a Kindle 3G, so I thought I'd email you about it. I got my Kindle a few months ago and have been using it a lot since. The books are fantastic and cheap, but I'm emailing about the free 3G because you asked people to."
We weren't quite sure how that worked. We thought that it might have been...
We're not Kindle users here, can you tell?
...built in and sort of all seamless to the Kindle user, but we weren't sure.
Well, David says he loves it. He says, "With the browser, there's an inbuilt browser for looking at normal websites, but it's a painful experience," he says.
It's not designed to look at browsers, look at websites, though, is it?
No.
It's designed to read books.
But the browser's designed for purchasing books, I think. It does work over 3G, he says, as well as Wi-Fi, all completely free of charge. The restrictions are, 1, you can't download any file type, only some of the supported ebook files. 2, you can't tether it. 3, there is no tabbing or windowing supported. 4, it's an e-ink screen, so black and white only, and no video.
And very slow to update too, I would imagine.
And 5, no plugins are included, e.g. Flash, and only basic JavaScript works, so no drop-down menus work, etc.
Yeah, from what I can gather, it's intended so you can do things like reading newspaper or magazine articles online rather than doing real web browsing.
David's given us an extensive email here with lots of good features about the Kindle. I'll just go...
There's two pages of it here.
Yes. He says he uses instapaper.com. He uses that a lot for saving articles he finds online that he wants to read later. Impulse buying. He says he likes the 3G because he can buy books quickly. Often I've been listening to a radio show at work or talking to a friend colleague who recommends a book, and with the 3G Kindle he can look up and buy that book immediately. Wi-Fi hotspot. For those who think they'll just tether their smartphone to their Kindle for free personal document delivery... It doesn't work. Coverage, he said, is amazing. I've never found myself without a connection. He says, with Calibre, there's a program called Calibre, and if you go to www.calibre-ebook.com, you can use it for organising your ebook library. He says, the Wi-Fi-only version don't bother. It's only $60 cheaper and creates a whole lot of hassle. If you're struggling to find an extra $60, you shouldn't be buying a Kindle in the first place. That's a fair comment, David.
I like that, yes.
And why not a tablet, he says. It's a very different device. I carry around my Galaxy Tab and my Kindle 3G everywhere. The Kindle is for reading static text. The Tab's for everything else. The Kindle screen is just amazing for reading. Wow, that email turned out a lot longer than I thought, but I hope that provides a bit of discussion. Thanks, David. It's great feedback. Very good.
It was. I must admit, I raced out of the studio then when you were talking there. I went to bring my iPad into the studio. I have an iPad 1. And this the was it the app of the week last week that Lena was talking about, which is called Flipboard. I love this app. This is really good. It enables you to turn all your things that you follow into a easily digestible electronic newspaper.
I just saw Lydia on Facebook on that.
Lydia is on Facebook. And that's a long story, but Lydia, is that, did you want me to take a photo? There you go.
That's done.
Oh, it's done? Okay, good. And I must admit, I find it's a really great way of reading things. So there's a lot of these apps coming out now where you can actually you can look at the content that you're generating socially in one easy-to-consume place.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlike Paperly, where you can read the newspapers that everyone churns out from time to time.
Which is paper.li,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, that's right. A wonderful service. And I think this is, it's really starting to make social networking really come together now, these sort of applications. And you can read it on anything. Well, maybe not the Kindle, but definitely on a lot of the apps and the smartphones and tablets that are out now.
Do you have television ads for Amazon Kindle here?
Haven't seen any.
No?
I haven't seen Amazon Kindle advertised on TV, no.
The one that I've seen, obviously must have been in the States because I couldn't remember, is one where they're at a resort and there's a girl in a bikini on a sun deck. She's reading an Amazon Kindle, and the guy next to her, he's also there on a, you know, banana lounge with his, probably his iPad. It doesn't exactly show you, but it's probably his iPad.
tablet device with an LED, LCD screen.
And he cannot read it, and he's turning it, and he's squinting, and then he turns to her and says, "How are you reading that?" And she turns around and says, "It's an Amazon Kindle, only $129.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like
it's a really good ad, you know, and I just wondered if you'd seen it.
No, I haven't. You know, maybe it'd be up there on YouTube. Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know what the price of them are here. I think that was, but I remember that ad because of that. You know, it was a good line to use.
That's all the correspondence, Andrew. So yes, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is where to send your feedback.
Okay. There's one you might have missed. From Mark Peterson. G'day, Mark. Mark came along to our show last year.
Oh, Marky Mark.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he said an email saying, just wanted to say thanks for the Moshi Bass Burgers that he won at last year's final show. Initially, he was going to give it to his dad as a Christmas gift, but after plugging it in, he was and being fascinated by not only its form and function, it had good sound. So
good.
He kept it and gave his dad socks instead.
So
that's the spirit.
Oh, poor dad.
Hope he's not listening. Sorry, Dad.
So you missed out Marky Mark's dad.
So I
remember looking at those when they were passed through the studio and wondering what they were like. Obviously, they're not too bad. So
yeah, they're pretty good. Pretty good. You can pick them up on eBay, I think, for 40-ish or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
If you're that way inclined, it's really handy. I guess the best thing about it is it's just got a little 3.5mm jack on the back of them. You can plug them into like an iPhone or a phone in general or anything where you want to get sound out of a headphone jack, and away it goes. You just got to charge them up a little bit. So that was really good. So
I did see Mark's message come in. I'm sorry I left that off my list.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how that happened.
Okay, very good.
It's an administrative error.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's all right. Considering the amount of acoro that we get these days, it's completely understandable.
In the Tech Talk Radio mail room.
Yes, indeed. All right, lots has been happening, and yes.
Around the world, you're listening to Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio.
And our thoughts goes out to all of our friends listening to us north of us in Japan at the moment with the terrible news of what's been going on, tsunami and earthquake-wise. They received now the third largest earthquake in recorded history in Japan, and they upgraded it to a magnitude 9 earthquake the other day. I don't know why they would do that. What the difference? Maybe the judge's verdict came in or something like that.
Yeah, by examining the size.
They checked the
seismological data, I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, there's a really great website, which I must admit I frequent regularly now for all the wrong reasons. It's the USGS website in the United States, which is...
the Geological Survey, is that the one?
Yeah, where you can go and have a look at real-time maps of earthquakes that are happening around the planet, and you can click the links, and it takes you down onto maps where you can zoom in on your one of the Google products, and it takes you right down and shows you where it all happened and why. The Google Earth program actually maps earthquakes in real-time too, I've since discovered. There's a lot of technology out there that's sort of allowing us to keep tabs on all that. But I must admit, it was one of those things. I walked into the room, I turned the telly on Friday afternoon, and there was live coverage of this big black wave that was sort of heading through fields.
It was absolutely horrifying to watch, wasn't it?
I thought it was a movie.
It took me
a minute or two of watching it to realize, hang on, this is real. This isn't one of those... I thought it was one of those end of the world movies when I was watching it. And then
2012.
I
realized,
it looked a lot like it, yeah.
These are the outtakes or something.
Yeah, I was thinking, what on earth is this? And you see this black wave just destroy everything in front of it. It was when, you know,
floating cars. It's just like a movie, isn't it?
Oh, unbelievable. And of course, there's the untold anguish of the loss of life as well as the destruction throughout Japan, which goes without saying, I guess, because, you know, I think we've seen Christchurch, we've seen Queensland, and now this, everything's getting going up a notch.
Well, we're sitting here last week saying how terrible it was what had happened in Christchurch. And we're watching all of the footage coming out of Christchurch thinking this is absolutely terrible. And have a look at the scale of what's happened in Japan. It's just, it's absolutely horrendous.
Too many, one after the other. We need a rest from this stuff.
We really do. Yeah.
I have a friend who's on a Facebook friend, a guy I used to work with, and he's over there at the moment. And he said that communications are down, but his internet was working. So he just put out a message on Facebook to let everyone know that he was okay because all the other lines of communication he was using were out.
And that was one of the things I was hoping to talk a little bit about tonight, is that the traditional means of communications are failing, but somehow or other Japan is so wide, either via radio networks such as wireless or Wi-Fi, right through to, I guess, a cable or DSL, however they get their broadband over there, but they still seem to be managing to keep on top of things.
Well, it's one of those things. It's just another method of communicating, and, you know, when things are falling down all around you, you use whatever still works, don't you?
Absolutely. So. And, of course, the media companies have really cottoned on to this. How many Skype video conferences have you seen pumped out on Channel 24 in the last little bit?
A few too many,
yeah. There's lots of them. A few pixelated news.
Not to mention, screen grabs of Facebook entries and things on the news and all sorts of stuff. So, just any communications channel will do when there's so much missing.
Yeah, and it's the Japanese are using social networks like Twitter, Facebook, and Mixi as cell phone networks are jammed following the earthquake last week. What would happen, Mark, to a telephone network in that sort of instance? Would it just literally fall over, or would it be? Are there fail safes in a network to try and handle loads across and to distribute loads around a network, or would it just sort of go, no, I can't handle this?
I can only talk from the mobile's perspective. Usually it just overloads. There's so many people trying to use it. So, you know, it's a snowball effect. You lock out one base station that puts load on the others. Then there's a whole lot of people trying to make calls. Then there's more people on edge of cell because they're further away from their local ones down, so they're using something further away. So that uses up more resources like power to talk to that particular user. And then, you know, there's call control mechanisms right through the system that says, you know, start offloading here and do this and do that, reduce the amount of traffic, you know, put data as a lower priority and that sort of stuff. But really, in an emergency, the whole lot just over the top. And that's why in Christchurch they were telling people to use SMSs, because it's a quick method to get through. It's only a small amount of data. It gets sent in overhead channels, so it doesn't take up a voice call. And then they can leave, if you're doing text, then you can leave voice channels open to emergency services to use.
Which is probably very handy in those times of need. Carriers were limiting voice calls on congested networks, with NTT Docomo, restricting up to 80% of voice calls, especially in Tokyo and northeastern Japan. You've got to think of the population that they have in that country, and the demand on the telephone network must have been unprecedented at that particular point in time. I don't know whether anyone knows, but do they have like we have here now, which is the SMS warning system, where a government agency can send a text out to everyone in an area and sort of say,
I don't know what they have over in Japan. I know that NTT Docomo have always done sort of their own thing. They've almost been their own networks and own technologies. So they're only now starting to fit in with the rest of the world in what technologies get used and alike.
Yeah, well, apparently a lot of the Japanese ended up having to use payphones and things like that, which I believe the phone companies opened up to being free calls throughout the course of it. But yes, Twitter, Facebook, and the regular channels, the videos, a lot of we saw first up have come through those social networking channels. So it's quite clear now that Facebook and Twitter are playing major roles in today's modern communications.
One other bit of news I noticed coming out of Japan was that the Japan as a whole moved 2.4 metres from where it was.
Yeah.
So that's going to have some implications for GPS-based systems and navigation systems.
You don't think of that, do you? That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, 2.4 metres, it's not enough to put you on the wrong road or to stop you in front of the wrong house, but it's enough for those GPS systems that do lane detection to detect you in the wrong lane, that sort of stuff. So Absolutely. And it adds to the uncertainty of the GPS device. So, you know, where you've got densely packed lanes and things.
The GPS itself is going to continue to work correctly.
Yeah.
All the maps that are underlying, though, are all going to be wrong now.
Yeah, but the road is now 2.4 metres from where the map says the road is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's going to need to be updated and that sort of stuff.
The GPS puts you on the Earth in exactly the same spot it always did.
Yeah.
It's just that's now moved. That's now something else.
Yeah, the road isn't on that point, yeah.
I was just having a look at the USGS .gov website at the moment. If you click through to the latest earthquakes in the past 7 days, there's now 600 earthquakes listed on that map, and normally there's 200, maybe little ones around the place dotted, but majority of the activity is definitely around the Ring of Fire, which is the Pacific tectonic plate. It's pushing towards the east, towards Japan. So now there's volcanic activity and stuff like that, and of course don't forget New Zealand's at the southern end of that same tectonic plate too, so things are moving out there.
You don't have to use the US one either. Did you know that there's an equivalent of that service in Australia?
Really?
Yeah,
do tell.
Geoscience Australia.
Oh yes.
You go to ga.gov.au, and it's got that equivalent sort of information from an Australian point of view as well.
Excellent.
So Geoscience Australia's data would have contributed to the worldwide view of
I'll have to check that one out.
Of the earthquake in Japan.
Have they got a real-time map?
I don't know where they've got
maps. Hang on, they've got a map thing over there in protocol.
Haven't been there for a while. I'll tell you what I did notice when I was there.
Earth monitoring back, and reference systems, maybe.
Was that if you're in Australia and you do feel an earthquake, you can go to Geoscience Australia and you can fill in an earthquake report and help them to collect data on earthquakes that actually happened in Australia.
Mm.
So, you know, you can report how much movement you felt and if there was any damage and, you know, exactly what time you felt what, and help to contribute to the scientific understanding of earthquakes.
All right. I think you do that one, the USGS one too.
Yeah, no doubt, yeah.
The thing that sort of bothers me a little bit too, and hello to all of our American listeners, that California's on the other side of this plate. And, you know, you've got to wonder what's going to happen over there, if something's going to happen. I don't want to moz anybody or anything, but...
Yeah,
goodness
well, this is another edge of the Pacific Plate, which is also one of the plates that was involved in the Christchurch earthquake as well. Yeah.
There were parts of the western seaboard in the United States that sustained a lot of damage from after this earthquake that's totally destroyed, like the northeastern part of Japan. And they had video of this, you know, the waves coming in, and it wasn't obviously on the same scale as Japan, but was destroying marinas and beachfronts just because of the...
The tsunami coming across.
Absolutely, yeah, because the same earthquake had caused the wave to you know radiate out.
There was a great picture I saw of a wave coming into San Francisco, and a very still bay, and you could see this wave rolling up,
It's absolutely astonishing that far away, that the wave can still have enough power to do damage. It's because, you know, as waves propagate outwards from a source, their power dissipates.
It's the inverse square law.
Yeah, exactly. It expands, so the power's spread over a wider area. So that far away, the opposite side of the Pacific Ocean, and it's still doing damage, that's astonishing.
Mm. Anyway, so from a technological point of view, I think we're going to see some interesting things now with Japan. Sony being one of the major manufacturers of consumer electronic goods.
It's going to have a massive follow-on effect for like Japan's productivity and economy.
Well, when you think about Japan, it's the third largest economy in the world. And like the American economy at the moment, they have 0% interest to stimulate their economy. And, this is not going to help in any way, shape, or form.
Well, it's a terrible thing to say, but sometimes a natural disaster can actually have beneficial effects to the economy as well, in that there's a lot of economic activity involved in rebuilding and restoring infrastructure and all that sort of stuff. So
maybe so commodity prices may go up, but...
There's swings and roundabouts in effect. I mean, it's horrible to try and find a positive in something that's done so much damage.
Absolutely.
But the economic news is probably not all bad, and Japan's a very strong economy anyway. Really,
it is. Though Sony have ceased production for the time being, their plants are up in that region. Also, I believe. And I could stand corrected, but a couple of car manufacturers, I think Honda and Toyota were two that came.
Well, none of those companies are going to feel any you know, they're not in danger of going out of business because of something like this. In,
well,
if anything,
not,
they're going to come back strong and provide employment and all that sort of stuff. So
maybe not from a car manufacturer's point of view, but a lot of electronics, you know, the componentry level were made in that particular part of the world too. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know what it's like in motor vehicle manufacture here. If one component dries up, it has a flow-on effect to a lot of other you know,
yeah, well, that's true.
Process and production, yeah. And it just stalls. You know, like if a particular part for a CRT can't be made because it's only made in one factory, which is now no longer, CRTs are going to be somewhat problematic.
So, what would you theorize?
We don't use CRTs anymore, anyway.
What would you theorize might happen with, say, someone like Sony if they cease production in a particular plant? Do you think like is it going to be some time or prices?
I would think it'll be a pricing issue because they'll be able to source componentry from elsewhere. Yeah, you know, a lot of components are made in Korea and China, and of course in America and places like that. It's just a matter of they won't be able to use their own branded products. They might have to buy in from another manufacturer close by to keep their products up. But you look at Sony. Sony aren't just consumer electronics. They are a lot of things to a lot of people. Broadcasters live on Sony equipment. So, you know, it's all swings and roundabouts, I think. It'll just keep flowing. It might be some supply issues for a little while. But
yeah, they'll close down a plant for a few weeks, do some rebuilding. They'll get a plant up and running again.
And some price hikes maybe on certain items that were made in that plant.
Potentially. Yeah, but I think if you were in the market for a Sony product, now'd be the time to buy. if you were putting it off, I wouldn't put it off too much longer. Otherwise, I think you'll see prices go up, but who knows?
There's another issue, of course, there's been a lot of damage done to the power infrastructure in Japan, in particular the nuclear power stations, which we're still watching to see what the outcome's going to be with those. And there'll be a lot of manufacturing that's shut down just until they get, you know, power up and running, and then they'll be able, and you know, if there's been damage to things like water supplies and so on, and once they get the basic infrastructure up and running again, the plants will probably open up and keep running again.
Well, yeah, and I think the first of the two power stations which has gone up was one that was going to be mothballed a couple of months back, but they kept it going because it's a 40-year-old plant or something. Don't quote me on that, but I think I heard the news that it was a fairly sizable, you know, length of service it's done, and they start cracking the pipes and the containment things sort of all get a little bit old, like we do, really. Yeah. We all start cracking at about those sort of times, don't we?
Pipes start getting a bit old and all that sort of stuff.
If I could editorialize very briefly about those things, you're hearing a lot of comment in the news media at the moment about the dangers of nuclear power and, oh my goodness, there's going to be a meltdown and this, that and the other thing. Whereas what we're seeing at the moment is how resilient and how much can fail, how much damage can be done to a nuclear power plant and still not release the radiation from the main reactor. The main reactors on these power plants, even where there's been explosions and complete failure of the cooling systems and so on, still haven't breached the actual containment of the main reactor and haven't released any significant amount of radiation.
Fingers crossed, so that's where it stays.
Obviously, we'd hate to see that change, and there's still obviously things that are developing situations, but I think the take-home message from watching all of what's going on with the nuclear power plants in Japan is not how much damage has been done to them, but how safe they are despite the massive amount of damage that's been done to them. So I think there's a lot of people out there missing the point and a lot of news reporting that misses that point.
The other thing that people miss the point of, a lot of people have been saying, why don't they have coal power plants? Why don't they generate their power some other way? The Japanese people, they're relying to a very large extent on nuclear energy, and it's a pretty simple answer, I think. They don't have coal. They don't have the resources, and they don't have the resource industry that we do here. And if they want to be able to have the economy that they have, and like the first world, you know, top-class economy, everything's running well, they've got massive production there, a massive population, they need to have nuclear power plants in order to support all that.
If you're going to talk about coal versus nuclear as well, we could talk about it on a purely safety basis. Even if you include the worst events at nuclear power plants in history, like, is it the Three Mile Island and Chernobyl?
Yeah.
Even if you include those disasters and all the deaths and injuries that resulted, it's still a tiny fraction of the number of deaths and injuries in coal mining to support the power industry. So, on a safety base, you know, nuclear power is frightening, nuclear accidents are very scary, but even if you include the very worst that's happened, it's still thousands of times safer than coal mining.
And as you say, Graham, one of the worst earthquakes and tsunamis that we've experienced, you know, in history.
Yep.
And the, as you say, these things, it's a testament to their construction, their design, despite the damage that's occurred.
Yep, there's still been explosions that have destroyed the building that contains the reactor.
Yep. And that was a pretty big bang.
The reactor inside in the middle of that is still not breached.
Mm.
Yeah, no, they've done well. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on a fairly interesting Monday night for us here, if you're listening to us live or in your pod down the track. Maybe things may have changed a little bit, so I guess it's time to move on. Also, last week we promoted the fact that Dave was going to come in from Microsoft this week to have a
Dave
bit of a chat
Glover.
To us.
Dave Glover?
Dave Glover, that's the man.
Phone 7, he was going to come in on the 7th.
He was going to come in
and
today.
He was going to come in on the 14th.
Yes, and we did get a one of those unfortunate SMS tweety type sort of thing saying, I have to go to Sydney urgently. So he will be in. He's promised. He said he's really sorry, and he will be in on the first Monday in April. I'm not sure what date that is, but that's the that was the next available. He was very apologetic about it. So if you've been tuning in tonight, we're still going to talk a bit about
Windows
7.
So that would be the 4th of April.
That sounds about right. Yes. He'll be in that night to talk a little bit about Windows 7. But there's been some major achievements in Windows 7. Dr. Ron, have you...
Windows Phone 7 you're talking about?
Yes, sorry.
As opposed to Windows
as
7.
As opposed to the operating system. Speaking of the operating system, may I digress?
Yes.
I've got a service pack.
Yeah, online. Service Pack 1 for Windows 7 and
that
Server 2008 is out.
That snuck
in. It didn't sneak in. It's been coming for months.
I booted it up the other day and it said Service Pack 1 had been installed properly. I said, really?
Yeah, it's been pushed out now with the Windows updates. And
IE9's about to become legit.
Yes, it's going to be released very, very soon. The IE9 release candidate's been fairly strong.
Yeah. How's your campaign of saving the world one browser at a time going, Dr. Ron? I've noticed your IE6 tweets during the course of the week.
There was some discussion during the week, wasn't there, in the Twitterverse? Yes, saving the world one browser at a time. I had a whole barrage of abuse and support and commendation and condemnation on Twitter after
so
I posted
took it all
that.
On the chin, did
no,
you?
No, I took it all on the chin, but yes, it was quite
water
amusing.
Off a duck's back, all those things.
I twit-picked a photo of my help about dialogue box, which was a nice fancy IE6 one at work.
Yes, I think I saw that. Yes. Disgraceful.
With the Tech Talk Radio webpage in the background that wouldn't load because the browser wasn't supported.
Can I go back to the service pack thing
for
a moment? I wanted to make a comment. In the old days, technical people like us, we'd see a service pack come out, we'd download the service pack, we'd burn it to a CD, and then we'd go around to all the computers we know and install the service pack off the CD. Do you remember those days?
Yes.
I certainly do, yeah.
Yeah. It's important to comment that that's not at all necessary these days. And in fact, that's usually counterproductive. It's going to be much slower and quite unnecessary and make you download a lot more than you need to. If you've been installing your Windows updates on Windows 7 as you go, and if you haven't been, you should... because if you haven't been, you're part of the problem. You're running a very unsafe system. If you've been installing those Windows updates as you go, then installing Service Pack 1 through Windows Update is going to be a much smaller download and a much quicker install because you've got most of it already. You've got most of it already in the cumulative updates that have been running, you know, every patch Tuesday as we've gone through the lifetime of Windows 7.
So if you put on a new installation of Windows 7 now, it'll go straight for the Service Pack 1, which then retrospectively gives you all those roll-ups up to that point. So you've got one place to install and it does the whole lot. Is that right?
If you're putting on a new installation, then hopefully we'll have new disks from Microsoft that will include Service Pack 1 in it. But if you've got a machine that's already existing in the world,
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying is you've already got most of Service Pack 1 already. You don't need to worry about downloading it and installing it off a CD or anything like that. Just let Windows Update install it, and it'll be a small download and a quick install because you've already got most of it already.
Very good. All right, Phone 7. There's been a bit of chat about Phone 7 of recent times. I think also there was a discussion about failed updates that they tried to roll out too, which I was hoping to ask Dave about tonight, or problems that happened in that way. And Dr. Ron, I was going to ask you before, have you seen many Phone 7, or any of you guys, seen any Phone 7 devices in the wild?
I'm yet to see a Phone 7 device in the wild. I know that Brian at Tech Talk Radio headquarters has got one.
He has.
Yeah, but I haven't seen one in the wild.
No, I saw one during the week. I didn't know the person, but I looked over his shoulder and saw that distinctive sort of icon.
Yeah, it's a very distinctive user interface, isn't it?
Yeah, and so I recognise that. So that's the first one I've seen.
Great. I've only seen them in like Telstra shops and places like that.
Have you? Yeah, well, it takes someone like Brian to actually get out there and be a trailblazer. So he's had it now for a couple of weeks, and I shoved a microphone under his mouth during the course of the week and asked him a few questions.
Brian, you're new to Phone 7. Where did you come from originally?
I came from the Android market, HTC Desire.
And how long now have you been using Phone 7?
I've been using it for about roughly 2 weeks.
And on what type of handset are you using it?
I'm using it on the HTC Mozart.
So 2 weeks down, how does it differ from other systems that you've used?
It's not as complex or as in-depth as the Android market. It's very simplified. I spoke to you about being very Apple-like, yet not Apple, and that's in the sense of it's simple, it's basic, and it's for the people that don't really want to go in depth with all the settings and all the advanced type of coding that you get with the Android phone.
What about apps and availability in the App Store? How have you found that?
Again, because I'm assuming it's a very new phone or a new market, there's not a lot of options in relation to applications. I've got my movie apps up and running. I've got my Facebook, my YouTube, so all the basic apps. I'm missing Vlingo, which is the voice activation app that I really liked in the Android phone. But other than that, I don't know. I think still young, still fresh, so it still needs a bit of work.
So your overall impressions on the device, would you recommend it to someone or would you say sit tight? What would you say?
I would say, one, I think the user interface is easy to use. So for the basic market, I think it's a brilliant phone. It's got a high pixel density, which makes it look much more sharper and schnazzier than the HTC Desire. But in terms of capability, I don't think it's as good as the Android just yet.
So Phone 7, your favorite app?
Phone 7, my favorite app? That's a tricky question. I would have to say, I don't know, I'm quite enjoying Xbox Live. They've got a wide range of games, which I should have mentioned earlier. But yeah, I would say Xbox Live would be my favorite app.
And why is that? Just because it's games and you can play it?
Yeah, pretty much. Also, battery life is really good on this phone, which makes gaming much easier.
If you had the opportunity to change anything in Phone 7, what would it be?
Voice activation. More in-depth voice activation. Speech-to-text capabilities whilst driving.
Very important, I would have thought. It's always good to be able to voice dial and not touch your handset whilst driving.
If it can be completely hands-free, that's ideal.
Yeah, you just got to remember to turn it on from time to time. I'm very guilty of getting in there and going, damn, who's that calling me and I haven't turned my Bluetooth on? Because you turned it off to save batteries. But try and remember to turn it on. Anyway, that's Phone 7 from a point of view that I haven't really had a chance to talk to people about yet because I don't know anyone.
It sounds like the same as when early Android was there. In that when you got on, you liked your phone, but it just didn't have the apps that the Apple store had, and you sort of had to wait for them or you had to find an alternative, and it wasn't as good in that respect. You loved your phone, you loved what it could do over the other ones, but you just weren't happy that all the apps were there or what you wanted was right in front of you.
Well, the app stores are actually becoming quite front and centre at the moment. Google had issues during the course of the week with one of some spammy / malware apps that sneak through in their so-called unregulated apps market. And then you've got the other extreme with Apple where you can't get anything through. Just ask Warlock in our chat. He seems to struggle getting stuff through those guys. Then you've got Microsoft in the middle, and their motivation at the moment is to get as many apps onto the App Store or their App Store as possible because they've got to compete with the two incumbents. And credit to Microsoft, I think they have now 10,000 apps which they achieved in 4 months. Not all bad. Not all bad.
And of course, most importantly, absolutely critically, Rovio have confirmed that Angry Birds is going to be available for Windows Phone 7.
That's excellent. I must admit, I've wasted quite a bit of time. I won't tell you where on Angry Birds, but
in the office.
In the office, that's right.
Yeah. And a very small office.
Yes.
More importantly, when's Cut the Rope going to be available on Android?
Cut the Rope. Yeah, that's an Apple app, isn't it? That's a game. Yeah. No, I haven't played that one yet.
My son's got it on his iPod Touch, and I can't get it on my Android phone. So
Lena says it's pretty good.
It is.
But she says a lot of things are pretty good.
Yeah. She tries to get it's Apple. She says is good, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. The Feecan in our chat, I think, starts rumours and scuttlebutt about Lena and using non-Apple devices, and got us all into trouble the other week. Anyway, I think it's time to take a break. When we come back, we'll view from the couch. Adam Turner, remember him?
Oh, we've got a couch this week.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. We've got a couch. We've got a whole heap of other things here, which I suspect we won't get through. But nonetheless, time for a drink of water. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You've got to remember that compression is not your friend.
Is it for credit cards only, or is it FBOSS as well?
Steve Wozniak, there was.
The traitor.
I'm down to four cables again, not 14,000.
Go away.
Click here to upgrade.
If you put your entire life online, you get what you deserve in some ways.
Optus have said sorry, and so say all of us. Fantastic.
This
all right.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Internet Explorer is due on March the 14th, Graham. There you go, as you mentioned earlier.
Hang on, IE9. Isn't that today?
Could be. Yeah, I think it is, actually. Hang on, let me check my date. Sorry, it's a long weekend. I'm not sure of it, but yes, it is. It's due today. If you're listening to us, Microsoft has announced that IE9 will be available for download as of now.
It might be a couple of days ago.
Could have been, but they did.
Depending on what station you're listening to us on.
Yeah, could have been. They did a release candidate recently.
Yes, they did.
It all comes out so quickly these days, doesn't it? So maybe when you do your next update on Patch Tuesday, they're going to foist IE9 upon you. Do you reckon?
They may or they may not force it immediately.
Yeah, not in
they
certain government departments, but
yeah,
certainly for the consumer.
They might release it and have, and until there's a real problem that IE8 can't cope with, they might not force you to upgrade through Windows Update.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Oh, well, Microsoft has been dribbling out new features ever since it released its platform preview in March last year, 12 months ago, which has now gone through the beta and the release candidate stage. So this is it. IE9's here, guys. HTML5, live on. And I think it even deals with Flash a little bit too. There's something I saw in the news today about Flash as well. Anyway, let's talk about Apple, shall we? Apple takes 83% of the 2010 tablet market. So this just goes to show how popular these iPad thingies are.
Newfangled iPad thingy bobs.
Yeah, and coming with iPad thingy bobs, as you said there, Dr. Ron, is iOS 4.3. Now, Adam Turner's concern recently was the fact that will iOS 4.3 slow down the iPad? Well, I haven't been game enough to load it up and find out just yet, so I'm wondering if any of our listeners have put the iOS
4.3
on their iPad 1.
What version of the operating system are you running on your iPad 1?
The one before that. 4.2, I think it is. There's got to be a way of doing it. Hang on, I'll just open it up here. I do actually have...
Yeah, you go start settings.
I do have start settings. No, no, it's an iPad. You just go settings.
Right.
And it's here somewhere, says he.
Start settings, control panel.
There's no about either. Okay, I'll give up. Hang on, maybe it's here, general. Reset. No. Right. Oh, here it is, about. It's settings, about.
Right-click my computer.
It tells me how many songs I've got, tells me a Wi-Fi address, and it tells me my version is 4.2.1.
4.2.1, okay.
So what does 4.3 give you?
4.3 is really takes advantage of the new hardware features in the iPad, such as the camera.
The iPad or the iPad 2?
The iPad 2, okay. I beg your pardon, because the iPad 2's got the front and I think the back camera on it as well.
Yeah. Yep.
And, it's probably got something there so it can detect when you put the magnetic covers on.
I went to the Genius Bar the other day.
And it does... hang on before you... Yep. Yes, the Genius Bar. Hold that thought.
Yep.
It has multi-context touch now. So you can put 3, 4, 5 fingers on it, can discern how many fingers you've got on there. And so theoretically now on the iPad 2, you can... You know the little black button that they put on these things, like the home button, which takes you back to the
button that you get. Yeah.
Well, 5 fingers I think now does the home button, and you can scrunch things up and twist things, Anyway.
Okay. I hope it's easy.
I read someone iOS, in the chat sort of conned their mother into buying one. Go and try it on hers.
iOS is the operating system for iPhones. For
iGadget.
And the iPad Touch and the iPod Touch and the iPad. So is 4.3 available on all of those things or?
It should be. I've got my Apple gadgets here, but I'm not going to upgrade my iPhone, which I gave to my iWife, because she's having enough problems as it is with her iGadgets. You know, on the iPad, you get the little, the iPhone, you get a little red rocker switch in the top left-hand corner. You probably don't, because none of you here have an iPhone. No, you're just, anyway, there's a silent switch, and it took her a good part of a week to work out why that she couldn't hear the phone ringing, because she'd accidentally bumped the switch on the top left-hand corner of the iPhone. So,
right.
Yeah.
I can't say anything. It's your wife. What can I say?
No, no.
It'll get back.
It does get back. That's the problem with doing radio. She's probably listening now. She's come listening up on the tonight. Chat. No, she's not.
Your daughter was in the chat room before.
Oh, no, I saw that. Yeah. Go to bed. School night.
Turn off radio now.
Absolutely. Anyway, Apple takes 83% of the 2010 tablet market. Now, that's a massive sway of what's out there. And I guess the only thing which probably would have come close to giving them a run for the money would be the Samsung device.
Can I take a guess? Yeah, the Samsung Galaxy Tab would probably be most of the remainder.
Yeah. In the 2010 third quarter, the iPad made up 93% of all tablet shipments. It's a pretty in demand sort of, but it's a revolutionary device. I bought one. You guys sort of laughed at me this time last year. I was in Palo Alto. We went down to the Cupertino shop. Yeah, because we bought one of the last iPad ones that was in existence.
We laughed at you because you said the last thing you were going to do was buy an iPad.
Yeah, well. We were stirring you up before you left. We said, you're going to come back with one. You go, no. We said, yes, you are. You go,
For research purposes.
The worm. Research, exactly right. That's the same reason why I bought an iPhone.
Yeah,
and
the
same reason why
it's
gone west.
I got an email from Lid. You'll never guess what Andrew bought today. I bet I can, Lid.
So anyway, iOS 4.3 came out fractionally early, obviously, to coincide with the release of the new tablets. To see if anyone out there actually has used it. I'm just having a quick scoot through the chat, but no one's owning up to anything in there at the moment, which is unusual for our chat.
I have a question.
Members.
I have a question. What were you doing in the Apple Genius Bar, Mark?
Yes.
Okay. My son desperately wanted an iPod Touch, and he got one for Christmas. Okay, so the fourth generation, it's running 4.2 version, I think it is. When we brought it back to Australia, he couldn't do FaceTime. FaceTime is the video chat type Skype thing from
Touch
users.
Did he go up to the man with his best American accent and ask him?
No.
Or did you do all the talking?
No, well, I had a very good experience at the Apple Genius Bar, and the problem got solved, and the guy was very knowledgeable. The only disappointing thing was the amount of time you have to wait to book in. And I guess I've been spoilt by being in the US. There's more Apple stores than there is here in Melbourne sort of thing. So it's easier to get to. But you walked in, the guy tested it. He said, yep, okay, it's got a problem. I'll upgrade the firmware. You've got the latest one, but I'll reload it. He did that. The problem's still there. I'll swap it over straight away. We're done. And we walked out with a working unit. And it was a very good experience all around. Yep. So it was a simple thing, and it wasn't it was a hardware fault, but it wasn't there all the time, because if you reset it, it came good, but as soon as you went to use it again, it failed a second time. So it was to do with the camera. You could flick between the forward-facing and the reverse-facing cameras.
Oh, yeah.
And then it wouldn't do that anymore after you used it the first time. So, and it was, and he said that it won't happen again. It's only 1% of failures on these devices, so he said it's not likely to happen again.
This is the second really good news story we've heard about Apple's customer service in recent times, because Lena had a very good experience when her screen on her iPhone spontaneously developed a crack.
It was just on a bedside table and it cracked.
Yeah.
And I bought it in the US, and I thought, this is a problem because I bought it in the US and I won't get a warranty, or it only works on FaceTime in the US. No. He said, none of that matters. It's that you bought it in the US. The warranty's still valid, and there's no region thing. You can still FaceTime, you know, whether you're in the US or in Australia. So, you know, I think some countries, because of their laws, are different, but not between Australia and the US.
Is FaceTime big in the US, Mark?
At least my son and all his friends have got it. So they sit there and they play PlayStation. Like, he was doing it for like an hour and a half this morning because we were having a sleep in. But, like, I swear, he plays PlayStation 3 online with his friends in America. And we've got to get the time zones right, so it has to be in the morning here. And the whole time he's doing FaceTime. So the little camera's sitting on the floor.
Oh, he's got it propped up looking at him.
Propped up looking at him so he can see his friend playing. And he's doing a video call while he's PlayStation 3, Little Big Planet 2 with his friends. You know? And he did it for an hour and a half this morning until his battery went flat. You know,
we haven't progressed to that far yet. We've just stuck to Skype, haven't we?
We have stuck to Skype for now. Yes, while we're on our PS3s. Now, can you tell me, can FaceTime only be used over the telephone network? Or can you use it like on Wi-Fi?
Well, it's an iPod network? Touch, so it can only work on Wi-Fi.
Oh, of course. It's an iPod Touch. You said that, not an iPhone. So it can only work on Wi-Fi.
In that case, yeah.
In the States, I think it's crippled so that you intentionally can't use it on the phone network.
Yeah, so I'm not sure when you buy an iPhone with a version 4, whether it comes with FaceTime or you have to load it as an app or whether it. But I believe you can get it on the iPhone, but I don't know anyone who's got an iPhone 4 then I could actually tell
them. Oh, it's good that it works on the iPod Touch. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, and he's enjoying it, so it's really went well.
Mrs. Dr. On's got an iPod Touch.
How does she find it?
She uses it all the time.
Has she lost a library recently?
She hasn't lost a library. No, but she loves her iPod Touch. She uses it all the time.
She's got the hang of syncing?
Yeah. She syncs. Yes, we had the great library catastrophe of 2009 or whatever it was.
That. Yeah. That's what I was referring to, where she inadvertently decided, I don't need these now, delete them.
Yeah, all these songs are on my iPod, I don't need them on my computer, I'll just mark them all.
And does she have a fourth generation?
I think it is. It's a fairly modern one.
Okay, yeah. So you'll have to see when she next syncs whether she gets this new version 4.3.
What version is FaceTime available from?
Do you know? Well, my son's got, I think, 4.2.
I'll have to try and put it on, and we'll try and do a FaceTime call.
I can't remember if it was 4.1.2 or 4.2. That anyway, it was just like
FaceTime's Apple's version of Skype video, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's video and audio chatting.
Yeah,
but it's only to other Apple devices, and it's only when you're on Wi-Fi.
That's good. Well, it should be because it gives you good speed through Wi-Fi. I would imagine,
but they don't want you doing it on the phone networks because you're depriving the phone networks of.
You mean they don't get enough out of us already?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Good. Thanks for that. The Commonwealth Bank is now offering free security software.
Which bank?
That's them.
Oh.
The Commonest Bank, as Dr. Ron affectionately calls them. Says he's sitting there just smirking and saying nothing.
Someone this called is radio. The Commonest. Yes, I didn't want anyone to know that I was smirking, but you've pointed that out to everybody. No, somebody called them the Commonest Bank in some correspondence, and it sort of stuck.
It stuck, did it? It's a bit like garbage band for me.
It is like garbage band for you. It's exactly like that.
sorry, where were we? The Commonwealth Bank of Australia has begun offering its NetBank customers, which is the online portal where you come and check your bank balances and do your transactions, free security software after finding that only 56% of customers had security products installed. Customers were invited to use McAfee's internet security product at no charge for 6 months in accordance with a confidential deal struck between the bank and the vendor. So there you go. If you don't have any antivirus stuff on your machine,
then go and get a proper one and don't rely. Your bank is not a software vendor.
couldn't have spoken and authorized by Graham.
Thank you very much.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And at this point in time, it's time to go because Adam's talking security issues, and that's the subject of this week's View from the Couch.
This week, we've taken the couch on the road, and we'll be listening to Catherine Kerr from the Australian Community Emergency Response Team talk about the latest security trends at the recent Media Connect Kickstart Technology Conference on the Gold Coast.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Catherine Kerr. I am from AUSET, the Australian Computer Emergency Response Team. So I've been asked to talk about the cybersecurity trends as AUSET sees it. And if you look back over the last 7 years, we've seen some very large, significant trends. Back in 2004, phishing started, and then the malware in terms of cybercrime started to ramp up quite considerably. We've seen a lot of innovation in terms of the malware development. We've seen a widening of attacks in terms of attacks on websites. Traditionally, it used to be for defacement purposes and, you know, ego promotion, but now it's for the purpose of facilitating cybercrime. And in particular, the number of websites that are compromised for the purposes of solely of putting malware on there and compromising computers to create these botnets to continue the cycle of illicit funds generation is just exploding. So these are some of the big trends in terms of the attacks. In terms of the vulnerabilities, what we've seen is early on we saw lots of vulnerabilities being discovered in operating systems. A lot of the vendors have done a lot of effort into reducing the number of those vulnerabilities. Then we saw the attackers starting to look for vulnerabilities in the applications, proprietary applications, as well as open source applications, and these third-party applications now, especially where there is no control over the scrutiny of the application and they're just made freely available. The users are generally taking a lot on board in terms of whether they can trust the application, in terms of whether it has any vulnerabilities. And secondly, as we're also increasingly seeing, are these rogue applications which are deliberately portrayed to do certain things. So there are some of the big trends. We're also seeing what I call a dumbing down of security. We've got companies who should know better in terms of how to build websites, how to secure websites, and they're not doing so. There's less interest in formal training of IT staff, less interest in assessing the security configuration and management processes of the servers and the networks and the systems. And as a consequence, we're seeing these increase in attacks occurring. There have been some efforts in terms of industry standards, for example, in the payment card industry, and those sort of solutions are not a panacea, but they certainly have helped improve the security of online payment systems where they've been applied. But in terms of web security, which is a big problem area at the moment, for example, OSCET notified close to 30,000 businesses and organisations around the world, including many in Australia, of compromises to their websites, particularly the .com.au domains, very heavily affected in that area. Malware has defeated that, man-in-the-middle attacks, HTML injection, all these capabilities give the criminal very significant control over the PC, in fact, in ways more than the user does. In terms of the next big areas, we are concerned about the electronic, personally controlled electronic health records, in terms of what access will be given to those if the systems are going to be allowed that anyone can access the records. For example, patients can access their own records from home or work. The security of that platform will be integral to the security of that data. And there is no way to protect the confidentiality once malware is on that computer generally. So I predict we're also going to see far more attacks.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there's more nasties on the way, so just don't get your... what's that advice, Graham, again? Don't get your antivirus software from your bank.
I was suggesting they're probably not experts. It's probably a commercial deal rather than one based in the merits of the technology.
Well, okay.
So, yeah, do some research, find out where a really good antivirus or security software is. It's definitely worth paying for a subscription to a quality antivirus product. Because, it's $40 a year or something like that.
What are you using these days?
Kaspersky Antivirus.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's about $40 a year per PC, discounts for multiple PCs, because we've all got more than one PC in our household these days. And, it's a very, if you break that down to what it costs a month out of your monthly pay, it's not a lot.
Peace of mind, too.
That's right. And, you could trust your antivirus to a free solution from, AVG or Microsoft or someone, but do you really trust them, or do you want to go with someone that's been recommended by someone who really is in the business and knows what they're on about?
One of the other arsenals in the tool, too, these days is... I got that around the wrong way. One of the other tools in the arsenal, is find yourself... sorry, Mark.
You've missed this, Mark, haven't you?
Mark's missed all this, hasn't he?
You've missed this banter, this live thing that we call live radio. No, Mark's lost it.
So where was I? One of the other tools in the arsenal is the fact that if you get yourself a good web host with reputable sort of quality company behind them, they do a lot of that preliminary... catching of nasty things in your email as it comes in. I know that my email at the moment is pretty darn
email
good.
Email host rather than a web host.
Where you email, like at your domain, like a techtalkradio.com.au.
Yep.
They're quite a good host, and as a result, for the people that like sending you those nasty things in email, which is traditionally how you get a lot of those things, they don't even make it to the mail run, which is good. So you've just got another, you know,
yep,
that's someone else on your side, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, or if you've a medium or even a relatively small business, if you're running your own mail servers, you can put multiple security products on there. I mean, most of my, you know, my customers that are running Exchange servers have got something like Kaspersky on the Exchange server, but they've also got a outward facing server that's running on a Linux server, running Sendmail, running an open source antivirus product on that, so the mail gets looked at twice before the user even gets it. So yeah, there's the way to go. One other thing to comment is I'm a big fan of just using the antivirus product from the security company's vendors. They always try to upsell you to the security suite, and they've all got them. You know, Norton and McAfee and Kaspersky and all the others. They've all got this security suite that adds on all sorts of extra features and parental controls and firewalls that block outgoing connections and all that sort of stuff. Windows has got a firewall that blocks incoming connections for you already. Something blocking an outgoing connection is only going to save you if you're already infected with something. So, really, seriously. And in general, the security suites, I find, cause more trouble than they solve, because you find that you load up an innocuous application like Skype or one of the messengers or something like that, and your security suite blocks it from making connections. And if you answer the question wrong the first time, it's hard to find the setting to unblock it again later on. And you know, you just find that it's much harder to get things working if you get those products. And it's an extra, you know, it's an extra cost for not much benefit. So
a lot of those packages, Graham, I found a Foistware.
Oh, yes.
Install stuff, and if you don't, you know, you're clicking through the next buttons really, really fast, and you don't look at all little checkboxes.
Yeah, that's
that are
what
ticked.
I mean when they try to upsell you. When you go to renew after 12 months and you need to renew it, they say, oh, why don't you renew to the security suite? But they make that the first choice.
That's right.
So you have to then actively turn it down and no, I only want to renew the antivirus product. Thank you very much. Yeah, so as you're right, they do try and foist it upon you a little bit. So, worth watching out for that.
Now, I'm the same as you. I use Kaspersky on my computers at home still. And I also have a mail server.
And you're using the antivirus only, or using the security
suite? I'm using antivirus only.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
And I'm running a mail server which has got Spam Assessments for Spam.
Clam AV
AV for my mail.
Yep.
So,
open source anti-spam and open source antivirus on your mail server. And then you've got a commercial antivirus looking at it on your workstation.
On the workstations. On the
clients. You've got at least two levels of thing there. Now, if you had an Exchange server running as well, you'd have three levels. You'd have the open source on the
Linux server
on the gateway on the external server. You'd have a commercial product on the Exchange server, and you'd have your product on your workstation. So things would get looked at least three times, and you can do it that way, or as Andrew says, you can use a host that does it for you, or even Gmail. Gmail is superb for both anti-spam and antivirus. I have
a few things in your toolkit though. Don't just rely on just one.
That's absolutely right. Any one of them can, you know, it's easy enough for them to miss something in an update, or for something to go wrong, or even for the application to just crash on your machine and not run for a little while. So it's important to have more than one level. Even if you've got a, you know, a Gmail account or a hosting provider that filters your email for you, it's still important to have the filter on your machine as well, because you just never know when something's going to slip through. You've got to have it looked at multiple levels, at every level.
Indeed. I came across a client's computer the other day. She hadn't done updates because someone told her not to. Oh, no.
Oh, I've mentioned this before. Yes, there's a lot of fear and uncertainty. Fear, uncertainty and doubt, a phrase was used on the show a couple of weeks ago.
FUD.
F-U-D. Sure, every now and then there's a Windows update comes out that does something bad or upsets your machine or whatever. But again, it's a case of balancing the risks. The risks of not doing your updates are massively worse than the risks of doing them, even though occasionally an update goes wrong.
So, no, you must do your Windows updates on a workstation-level machine. Set it to install them automatically at 3 in the morning or whatever time you're not using your computer. And make sure that, when it says shut down and install updates, just let it do what it wants to do. It's very important. Otherwise, you're vulnerable to attack. You can have, software gets installed on your computer. Someone else can control your computer. You won't even know, and you're contributing to part of the problem. You're the one that all the spam is coming from. You're the one that's, causing other people problems.
And goes through a lot of bandwidth
and
very
you
quickly.
Won't find out until you get your bill from your ISP at the end of the month or you get shaped because you've gone over your limit.
You've got to ask, too, one of these days whether ISPs are going to take a little bit more proactive approach in saying, oh, there's malware or you're a bot, and pull you out and segregate
you. I've been in favour of this for a while. It's a big impost on an ISP to do this, but I think it's part of being a responsible part of the internet to detect machines that are sending out spam or doing other part of a distributed denial of service attack and block that access and help, but also then help the user to clean up their machine. And I know that, TPG is a company that I've had internet connections with in the past. They're not the greatest network for speed. But don't they're pretty good on price and so on. But one thing I have noticed that they have done with customers that I know who've used them is if they've had an infection on one of their machines that's been sending out spam, they'll just block the mail port. Everything else keeps working. The user can't send mail. They ring tech support. All you've got to do to get mail working is to put the authentication into your mail client and you can keep sending mail and they'll help and then you can start attacking what the real source of the problem is and clean the malware off your machine.
Yeah, Warlock in our chat says ISPs should block people who have zombie PCs. And I agree.
Yeah, but do it in a responsible and careful way and help the customer to clean up their machine.
Because you've got to bear in mind, too, that a lot of people that do these things consider it to be a bit of a competition these days, like the iPhone BlackBerry hacking competition that was held just recently. The iPhone 4 and RIM's BlackBerry Touch were cracked in a smartphone hacking contest. This is what you do these days. They obviously didn't touch any of the Android devices or any of the Microsoft devices, but in a two-day of the Pawn to Own competition at CanSec West in Vancouver, researchers took on smartphones after focusing on browsers the day before. So obviously there's a convention over there. The iPhone 4 was taken out by Charlie Miller, setting a record by winning a fourth year in a row. The flaw he and partner Dion used has already been mitigated by Apple's iOS 4.3. So they've obviously found a little loophole in the operating system. So once again, look at your patching we're needing, Graham, and
yes, absolutely.
The two other phones, another team of researchers, Willem... I'm not going to say his last name because I'll mispronounce it and it'll be awfully embarrassing. William and Vincero managed to crack a BlackBerry Torch 9800 very quickly as well. And each team takes home $15,000 in the handset. So that's not a bad winning.
Warlock's attacking your pronunciation of pwn to own.
Pawn to own.
No,
not pwn.
Pwn.
Pwn? Pwn to own.
It's a deliberate mistyping of own with a P instead of an O. P-W-N.
I stand corrected. Thank you, Warlock.
We'll get to the pawn at the odd spot.
No.
Speaking of odd spot gadget and website of the week, Dr. Yes, Ron, please. You've got them, haven't you?
I have.
That's good. I'm really pleased.
I'm good to go.
You're good to go?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to read something out fairly shortly, which I'll put on the rundown, but I know you've got something else.
We'll save your website for the website.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of the odd spot, because there's a really funny thing that happened during the course of the week, which I got to laugh at.
Speaking of porn, yes.
Nothing to do with that.
One. You sent me one with the real estate one.
Yeah, I did, but that's not the one I'm talking about. I'm actually going to talk about something else. But all right, now that you've...
Can one or other of you tell us what you're talking about, please? Okay.
We'd rather not.
In the United States, a place where all sorts of really funny things happen, a truck crash sprayed the US highway with printer ink. Now, could you imagine what happens here? A semi-trailer carrying industrial printer cartridges has rolled in the US state of Massachusetts, spraying a kaleidoscope of color across a major highway. The driver, fortunately, was not interested. It's one of those nights tonight, isn't it? According to Boston.com. That's up your way, wasn't it?
It was.
Massachusetts. Yeah. So you got out of the state just in time before the...
to know what highway.
Yeah. What does it say down the bottom here? Although the truck had been transporting red, blue, and yellow cartridges to a newspaper company, the yellow cartridges appeared to have gone undamaged, so there was a lot of magenta everywhere.
That reminds, there was an ad for one of the printer companies used to be on the telly with all these colours bouncing around all everywhere. It must have been a bit like that.
Oh, must have been. Dear. Now, we don't have a lot of time left, so we'll start a manic 15 minutes here, and I'll just gloss over a few interesting things that are worth talking about this week.
We need to leave time for our drawing of the app of the week and our giveaway of the very, very first Bluetooth headset.
Yes, that's what I was going to say before I got awfully distracted there.
The Plantronics M100 giveaway.
Come along to our website and submit your entry for the app of the week. We have a competition for the app of the week only, but you can also submit other things like odd spots and gadgets and stuff like that, because... You know,
there's a special page where you can submit.
You guys out there, you've got some great, you're just as warped and weird as we are in here. So send them through. They're absolutely hilarious. Even if we can't read some of them to air, it's a good laugh here in the Tech Talk offices, that's for sure.
The new segment is the app of the week.
The app of the week.
Every week, starting this week for 4 weeks.
Yep.
We've got a Plantronics M100 Bluetooth headset.
Recommended $129 going to the one that we choose as being the best.
And it's especially good for people with iPhones because it has a really cool battery meter feature that shows up on your iPhone.
Yeah, good.
To show you when the battery goes flat. No. So you'll have to give the... Yeah.
And see, what we're going to do is if you don't...
And Plantronics gave us 4 to give away.
They did. Thanks to Adam. Adam organised all that.
And thanks, Adam.
If we don't call your name out this time round, you're still in the next week's draw, and the draw after that, and the draw after that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because there's a lot of good apps out there, and we can only choose one each week.
Yeah, absolutely. So get in early, because the competition gets stiffer as time goes down towards our fourth one. So, the Australian government has launched a new data.gov.au portal. Now, this I thought was quite interesting.
The what?
The Australian government have launched a new portal where you can access Australian data.
Yeah.
And I thought this was the Bureau of Statistics.
I've got a new tab open.
Have you? Data.gov.au. Point your browser in that general direction there. Yes, this new look data site, which was revealed today, is replacing the old beta site that the government had mashed up there for a while. But anyway, the site surfaced 200 public sector information data sets for public review and use. Now, that's a lot of data. Found anything there of interest yet, Dr. Graham?
No, not yet. I'm just having a look around. Looks interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, there's all sorts of government data there you can download and do what you want to do.
Like census data and population and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, all sorts of things like that. Anything you want to know about
school data, census data, okay. So, hospital data.
All to be downloaded and used at your marketing need, Will, I think. Demographics, all sorts of stuff.
Great research tool.
It is. It is indeed. Attackers use Windows Floor to target activists on Google. Did you hear about this during the course of the week?
Well, hadn't read this one.
Haven't you? Hackers were exploiting a Windows and IE floor, which was disclosed in January, to attack Google users. And apparently these Google users were very targeted type sort of people. They are activists in certain areas.
Oh, yeah.
So we're now seeing this sort of personalized attack on a lot of people through Google. The attacks had also aimed at users of another popular social site, but didn't disclose which site. Microsoft said it was investigating reports of a limited target attack in an update advisory. So watch out. These crooks are finding great ways and means to have a go at everybody these days, even through Google. So
just let me understand this better. A problem with Microsoft software is allowing them to attack Google.
Yeah, users on Google.
Presumably allowing them to get the user's Google password or something like that, or to access their Google information.
And then attacking Microsoft is old school, is it? We now use that floor to go and attack Google instead.
Google has the database. That's what all counts these days, really, doesn't it?
I'm with that.
In other news, Nokia pays ELOP. I'm not sure what ELOP is. ELOP. Someone wants to tell me. I'm sure they'll correct me in the chat. Over US $6 million to move from Microsoft. Now, Nokia and Microsoft went to bed together in the not-so-distant past.
Well, Nokia said that it was going to be using Phone 7 on its handsets.
And now Nokia has turned around and said that they're giving $6 million away to move from Microsoft. Nokia will pay the CEO, Stephen Elop. Oh, that's a man.
He's the guy.
Yeah. More than US $6 million in a one-time payment for moving to the Finnish company from Microsoft later in September. So they're poaching, really?
Yes.
Bottom line?
Yes, I noticed this around about the time I was reading up about their adoption of Windows Phone 7. And so thought, that's an interesting coincidence that their new CEO is ex-Microsoft and they're suddenly moving to... that's an interesting coincidence, isn't it?
It is, very coincidental. Well, it's certainly securing your future, I guess, to a degree, isn't it?
The IT industry is full of lots of coincidences like that. Always has been, always will.
Look at last jump ship. He'd gone from Google across to Facebook.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Speaking of Facebook, Facebook puts 6 on the Forbes billionaire list. This is from IT News during the course of the week. Facebook not only made household names out of its founders thanks to the social network, which pulled in a few awards during the last ceremony.
Still haven't seen it.
Haven't you? It's worth a see. It's really good. It's also minted the latest crop of the richest people on the planet. 6 of the founders and investors behind the internet startup made the annual list of the world's top 6 billionaires, compiled by Forbes, which was published last week. None of us here, obviously, hit the list. Otherwise, you would have said so by now.
Not in this lifetime.
Mr. Zuckerberg's got a new puppy, did you know?
No.
He and his girlfriend got a new puppy dog.
Did they?
Yeah.
They can afford it.
I reckon. I don't know what it is. Someone will probably tell us, but I know they got a new puppy.
I didn't know he had a girlfriend. There you go.
Well, so, if you saw the film, I'm surprised he hasn't got a girlfriend. I mean, I'm surprised he has got a girlfriend if you've seen the film.
I've seen the film. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Whilst also on the subject of Facebook, Warner Brothers to offer movies through Facebook. I heard this during the course of the week. I said, what? Now, what's going on here?
So it was a big sigh, Graham. You're going to miss out on your movies if you're not on Facebook.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
See, movies were traditionally in the realm of Hulu and Apple.
What do they mean? They're going to have to offer their own like embedded video service or something.
Every single video on Hulu says the same thing. It says you're not allowed to watch it in your region.
Yeah, get a proxy viewer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Warner Brothers is making some of its films available on Facebook, opening up a new revenue source for the internet social network and signalling new competition for online entertainment companies. I wonder if they're just out to really... Because who saw this coming? Right, really? Who would have thought you'd get movies through Facebook?
I'll try anything.
Not me.
Next, we'll be buying music through Twitter.
It's yet another example of the movie and television industry completely and utterly missing the point of how to deliver content to users these days.
Hmm.
We're not watching television anymore. We're just not going to. We're not going to put up with that nonsense, and we're not going to put up with this either.
All right. Facebook, which makes money mostly through online advertising, takes 30% of the revenue from sales by third parties on the website using credits. The service will be initially available in the United States, as you'd expect. Streaming full-length Hollywood films on Facebook creates a new role for the 500 million-plus member social network. Although 500 million-plus, obviously, if you take out the rest of the world, I don't know how many US citizens are Facebookers, but they're the people that are going to benefit from this in the short term.
Will you be getting your movies through Facebook?
No, I don't believe that's quite right what you just said then, Andrew.
Oh, really? Why?
You said that American Facebook users are the ones that are going to benefit from this?
Oh, that word, the use of word benefiting.
Yes, I suspect the one and only entity that's going to benefit, no, two entities that are going to benefit from this is Facebook and Warner Brothers.
Well, that's why they do it. They're in business to do those sort of things.
No, Mark.
No, neither will I.
I missed that. I
was answering Mark's question.
I'll listen to it back on the podcast.
Yeah, good. Now, Adobe is having a go at iPhone Flash Ban. You know how, like, Mr. Jobs said no to Flash on
iPhone? They're not going to have Flash on the iPhones yet.
Well, we've got a Wallaby now.
The tablet or the iPad or what? A Wallaby?
A Wallaby. Adobe has released its free developer technology codenamed Wallaby, which converts Flash into HTML5. Flavored video.
So it'll run on the iPhone.
So it'll run on Apple devices.
This allows you to reuse and extend the reach of your content to devices that does not support Flash runtimes, i.e. the Apple range of products. Adobe has called a Wallaby experimental at this stage and notes that it was primarily designed to transform Flash files into formats acceptable to Apple's iOS device.
So it's going to get the content to those devices one way or another. If Steve Jobs doesn't want to cooperate, then they're going to find another way to do it.
Well, when you think about it, there's a lot of people out there with iGadgets.
Absolutely.
There's a market that's going begging if they can't get their Flash content onto those devices.
Apple has said, it's not our problem. That's the developer's problem. Make it HTML5.
Yeah.
So Adobe's going to do it.
Now, any developing houses out there that are listening at the moment, because your ears have probably pricked up a little bit after we mentioned that, we've got a friend of mine is looking for a new job. She was with a very high-end company during the course of the week.
Oh, TikTok Radio and Recruitment Agency.
Correct.
Now, is it?
Correct. Yeah. So if you're looking for a brand manager and a development guru, she's absolutely sensational at getting in contact with us at the show.
Oh, drop us a line with feedback or something.
And we'll try and do some job placements here because, it's sort of all happened at the wrong time for her and she needs to get into some work.
And yes, she's well worth, great designer. You'd be surprised at what she's designed. Big names, Coke.
There's lots of people around who do design work and that sort of stuff, but there's not that many really good ones. She's the really good ones are like Hensteith.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my community service announcement for the day. This is Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Dr. Graham, Andrew, and the long return of Mark Diggins to the microphone.
Yay.
This evening here. If you go, who's that voice? Haven't heard him before. Well, no, he was here 3, 4, 5 years ago. He went wayward for a while. He went out. He discovered his inner self, and he's come back. Oh, dear.
Midlife crisis, they call it.
Yeah, yeah. Is that what they call it, is it? Yeah. I thought you're just avoiding all the catastrophes around the world, and you've decided to come back to a place which is relatively stable, tectonically speaking.
Yeah.
Don't know about government-wise or anything else, or dollar-wise, but nonetheless.
We should talk about that sometime.
We should.
I left just after the election that said there was going to be a national broadband network when I was back. You know.
Oh, really?
Like, where is it?
And what's changed?
Yeah.
I'm expecting 10 megabits per second over my fibre to the home, and I haven't seen anything yet.
What? No sign of that man digging up your street with putting in a bit of glass? No?
No, not yet.
Okay, don't hold your breath. We've got 10 years to roll it out or something like that. That is unless the opposition gets in and you know, white ants it or whatever they do to things like that.
Anyway, I digress.
Were they talking about a net filter when you were here?
Oh, yeah, that was going to be definitely happening.
Yeah, well, they're still, that's sort of been...
That'll come back.
Put well and truly on the back burner.
No, it hasn't.
Yeah, it's been put on the back burner, but it's not...
It's they're going to pump up the gas underneath it very surely because of what Ironet's done with the movies and stuff like that. Mr. Conroy's going to, you know, there's the...
I know you and Adam as well, you don't think it's gone for good. You think it's going to come back to bite us when
we least expect it? While we have our current government with Mr. Conroy up there, the do-gooder that he is, then, yeah, I don't think it's going to disappear and it'll just simmer. It'll be like a volcano. It's dormant. When it will erupt, we're not quite sure. Dear. Anyway, this is Tech Talk Radio. Briefly, what else? We can't get through all this. We've actually run out of time. What else?
Listeners, Andrew is shuffling a large number of pieces of paper looking for which story he's going to talk about.
Let's just go briefly on this one. Because we're talking about iNet, the trial is likely to, or the costs for the trial are likely to be released in June. Because remember how they decided to agree to sort of somehow.
Yes, we had on the news the other week the result of the latest appeal in the iNet versus AFACT. Copyright movie downloading case.
Yep.
And the appeal came down in favour of iNet, but there were still going to be decisions made about the costs, so the court costs. So that's not going to happen now for months.
Yeah, till June. And because it wasn't lay down Mazaire like the first one was, which was everyone said, yes, iNet won.
So costs don't automatically get awarded against the loser.
With the appeal, they've decided that it's not quite as clean cut and that they're going to have to divvy up costs and they're going to come back and meet. But anyway, that's for another time. Speaking of Tech Talk Radio, we're running out of time rapidly. Oddspot Gadget website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You've got to remember that compression is not your friend.
Is it for credit cards only, or is it FBOSS as well?
Steve Wozniak, the traitor.
I'm down to 4 cables again, not 14,000. Go away. Click it, upgrade.
If you put your entire life online, you get what you deserve in some ways.
Optus have said sorry, and so say all of us. Fantastic,
this
all right.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own!
The Soundracer V8 for rev heads the world over. Plug this little FM transmitter into your car's 12-volt cigarette lighter socket. Select the frequency for your car's stereo receiver, and the Soundracer V8...
You have to bump your iPod for a while.
...mimics the sound of a race car using your car's stereo. Graham's ready to start tapping into the new tab, I think. Do you want a URL, Graham? Address?
I saw this video.
The Soundracer senses and calculates your car engine's RPMs and matches it with just the right engine sound effects. So whether you're accelerating or decelerating or changing gear or cruising the highway or just idling,
you'll think you're driving a genuine supercar because you'll hear the sound of the V8 engine coming through your stereo.
Imagine explaining that to the police officer when he pulls you over for doing excessive speeds up a highway. Sorry, officer, I was testing
out my new tech talk gadget. Exactly. Look, there's a little video there.
Don't mention
video.
Us. Don't mention us.
No, yeah. That's right. If you go to soundracer.se, www.soundracer.se.
Was that Sweden?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. Look, you can buy them online in Australia from... If you try latestbuy.com.au, for example, you can buy them online for about $60. Have a look at the little video they've got there. It's a lot of fun. That's our gadget, Andrew, the Sound Racer V8.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Thank you, Andrew, for your contribution this week. Our website is wordsolver.net.
This is brilliant, wasn't it?
Wordsolver. WordSolver.net. If you are a crossword or a Scrabble enthusiast,
or a 9-year-old at school that has to make some words up out of a group of letters.
If someone throws half a dozen letters at you, like G-N-S-I-E-O-R-A-D, like Gnzerod, and say, yeah, make up as many words as you can using these letters, you can punch the letters in, click on find words, you can specify the type of dictionary you want, and it will return all of the possible combinations of those letters that are actually words.
Yeah, so if you go to your teacher on the next day and say, here they are, make sure you don't fib. Don't get caught out here, kids.
Your teacher will say, how come you got every possible, legitimate combination of those letters? But look, I'm...
And three that she didn't think of.
Exactly. Yes, questions will be asked. But look, I've loved doing crosswords and cryptic crosswords for a long time, and this might just be a great little tool for you to keep running in the background. So that's our website, wordsolver.net.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
We have asked you for your contributions, and we have been inundated with some fantastic suggestions for App of the Week.
For you anyway.
Oh, no, we have had lots. We've had lots and lots.
Thank you, all over the world.
Yes, they've been from everywhere. So thank you very much, everybody who has sent in your suggestions.
Send us more.
Keep them coming in.
Three more after tonight.
We have not one, not two, not three, but four Plantronics M100s to give away.
And here goes the first one.
And the people that didn't win the Plantronics this week, we'll go back into the draw and the mix for next week. So the one we've picked this week that we think is the best, the most interesting, the most useful, is from Simon, and he submitted Glimpse, G-L-Y-M-P-S-E, www.glimpse.com. Simon says, I would recommend Glimpse. What I like I can selectively share my location with whoever I like without the entire internet watching, and for a selected time period. So it's very similar to Latitude, if you've ever used Google Latitude. However, you don't need to be a Latitude or Google user. You don't have to have your friends with Google accounts. And you can use what they describe as a groundbreaking new way to share your location with a patent-pending Glimpse Watch timer. So you can specify when and between what time periods your friends can see where you are and what you're doing.
I think this is a lot more socially acceptable for family members,
than Google Latitude.
Yeah.
Interesting. Have a look at that one. Glimpse.com is the website. It's a great little app. And Simon, you'll have a Plantronics M100 Bluetooth headset coming your way.
See, that was pretty simple, wasn't it? So if you come along to our website, click on the right-hand side. It says, tell us your Oddspot Gadget website of the week, and select an app. Tell us your favourite app and why. Send us a link to it as well. Don't just say what it is, because then I have to find it. Other things to do.
And all of the applications that you're suggesting, Andrew's putting up on the website, so you can see what has already been recommended. Yeah.
So we should have a good list after this, which everyone can have a play with.
So that's our app, Andrew, and Simon is the winner of the first Plantronics M100, and the application is Glimpse.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
We've been raving about FaceTime on the iPod Touch tonight, Mark.
Yes.
Ken Stambra from Liverpool dropped his 11-year-old daughter's iPod Touch recently. He said it made a hissing noise. I could then feel it getting hotter in my hand, and I thought I could see vapour. Mr. Stambra...
He didn't let the smoke out,
Not only did he let the smoke out, he threw the device out the back door, where within 30 seconds there was a pop, a big puff of smoke, and the device flew 10 feet in the air. That's not funny, Graham.
It's hilarious.
According to Mr. Stambra, Apple attempted to silence the father and daughter with a gagging order offering a refund only if he agreed to keep quiet. A number of bloggers have reported cases where iPods have exploded, usually involving older versions of digital music players.
Didn't we cover this off a couple of years back of exploding iPods exploding and things and iPhones and things?
Things continue to explode.
Things continue to explode. They do.
Well, when you sell a lot of these things, of course things are going to explode, aren't they?
You're going to have one here and there out of...
It's the battery technology that's the problem. We've got to get more and more power, more energy into smaller batteries.
That's good. Dr. Ron, you didn't mention anything strange in that either.
Why?
Normally take us down to the last lowest common denominator for the show.
There were no aliens in that odd spot. There were no bikini models.
Correct.
No zombies.
We can stop.
No conspiracy theories.
No conspiracy theories.
There before we do degenerate into that.
Just a simple exploding iPod story.
Oh, dear. Well, there you go. I think that's pretty much Tech Talk Radio for this earth-shaking week that we've had. All around the planet. I think it's been one of those ones which hopefully we won't forget, but certainly it's going down in the history as big shakers.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to do it again same time next week. Don't forget to get your entries in for one of these Plantronics headsets. Come along to the website, techtalkradio.com.au, right-hand side, click on the big button. You can't miss it. It's a quarter of the size of the right-hand side of the screen.
And if you want to win a headset, you've got to submit an application of the week, an app of the week.
Yep, cut and paste, all they have to do. Misspell it, because you'll end up on funny sites like someone just did on our chat, hair loss place or something like that, I think I was just reading. But yes, do that, tell us what it is, and you might win.
And tell us how you use it as well.
Yeah, that'd be good. Excellent.
Yeah.
Mark, it's been great seeing you again.
Thanks for having me.
Are you going to come back?
You going to come back?
Oh, yeah, I'll come back.
It's a bit like Wheel of Fortune. Are you going to come back next week and play again? Or?
I think Lena's back next week, so maybe another time.
Really? Oh, well, you never know. You're lucky in a big city. All right. It's been great. Until the same time next week, stay safe, everybody. And if you've got a job for a really good graphic designer, don't forget, give us a call.
Drop Andrew a line.
I need to know. She's really good. Drop dead gorgeous, and she's really good. Anyway, have I sold that hard enough?
As long as we know what's important in her credentials. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, what else do you need to know?
Well,
okay, that's it. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Lena van der Venter. Expert opinion is provided by Adam Turner, and our US correspondents are Lydia Davis and Mark Diggins. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. The show is broadcast, recorded and streamed live each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wishes to thank all the stations around Australia that rebroadcast Tech Talk Radio each week. Tech Talk Radio is also available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising inquiries, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.